Hello and welcome to Baylor Connections, a conversation series with the people shaping our future. Each week we go in-depth with Baylor leaders, professors, and more discussing higher education, research, student life, and important topics like today's addiction. It's part of our partnership with KWBU-FM. We air each Friday morning at 11 a.m., available online at baylor.edu/connections. So welcome to Baylor Connections. I am Derek Smith. Today our guest is Lily Ettinger, Senior Coordinator for Recovery Services with Baylor Wellness. In that role, she works with students in the Beecham Addiction Recovery Center to provide assistance, support, and community to students battling addiction at Baylor University. The Beecham Addiction Recovery Center, which is abbreviated to BART, was opened last fall after a $2.5 million gift from Bob and Laura Beecham, along with an additional gift from the Baptist General Convention of Texas, helped create a multifaceted program to dramatically enhance services to students at Baylor University facing addiction. Lily, welcome to the program. It's good to have you here today.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
Good to talk to you. And as we visit, you'll probably use the acronym BARC a few times.
Yes.
BARC is Baylor shorthand for Beecham Addiction Recovery Center.
Yes.
So we'll be talking about that as the show goes on. And really, you know, learning a little bit more about BARC. In some ways, it's been a long time coming, and in some ways, it's been a whirlwind. Let's go back 2 years ago. You set up a recovery program at Baylor, seeing if there's any student interest, and far more students that showed up than you anticipated. And now here we are 2 years later. There's a multi-million dollar facility to help students dealing with addiction. Tell us a little bit about that process.
Yeah, so in the spring of 15, we started a Women in Recovery meeting. I was a graduate student at the time working in spiritual life, and I was being able to be helped by Dr. Dawn Arterburn in the counseling center. And we just put out a few flyers thinking, you know, we know that there's a need. We expect a few people to show up. A lot more people showed up than we expected. And that led to me being able to be hired as I graduated with Dr. Arterburn in the wellness department to continue along with that work.
So a lot of people showed up and people recognized that there was a need. And obviously the Beecham's gift, $2.5 million, spearheaded that. But what did it take to get from that initial meeting to what we have now?
So over the course of, from the spring of 2015, we had less than a dozen students, you know, that year. But again, when you're expecting four or five and three times that amount show up, you wonder if you've hit on something. And at that point, we were just working with women in that meeting, and it was very obvious that, wow, if this many women are showing up, we know that particularly for younger adults, there tend to be more men who have problems with addiction than women, and we knew that there was that much greater of a need. In fact, when we did estimates, we could say that we could estimate there's probably around 200 Baylor students who were seeking or had sought help with addiction,
wow.
And that's using like some conservative national data, comparing it to our own population. So that first year, we started looking at having about a dozen, and it doubled in our second year, just the amount of students that were really consistently active, showing up multiple times a week, showing up to multiple meetings. We worked with the Association of Recovery in Higher Education and went to a lot of their trainings, went to their national conference. We actually got to present at their national conference this past year, and that just kept blossoming. This past year, we had more than 40 students regularly involved. So,
well, and now you've got a great facility. It sounds like you were kind of finding a home wherever you could for a couple years, wherever there was a room for you here at Baylor. Well, now you've got your own dedicated space.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me a little bit about how that's transformed the way you serve students here in these past few months.
Yeah. So when I first started, again, I was a graduate student. I worked in an office with eight other student workers. We call it the fish tank.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, it was impossible to have any sort of like one-on-one conversation. And after that, I moved into a converted mechanical closet because space at Baylor is at a huge premium. So I had an office that was a mechanical closet on the upstairs behind a classroom in the department that I was working in. And students weren't likely to walk in. It was really hard because it was in the Student Life Center, the SLIC. So they had to show themselves to someone, swipe in, depending on what type of student access they had. Sometimes they had to tell people where they're going if they're graduate students. And that became, you know, for a lot of people, that introduced that extra barrier. We had meetings all over campus and off campus. Seventh and James Baptist Church was really gracious and hosted the Young People's AA meeting here in town for a number of years. And to move from that to where we are now with this dedicated space, I had no walk-ins before this year. And this year, by the end of the semester, there were multiple walk-ins a week. There were days where every day of the week we had somebody walking in for the first time, finally ready to talk to somebody and to get help.
you know, I think anytime you look at money being dedicated and giving a place a home, that's important. But in terms of students dealing with addiction, just you mentioned the word barrier a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. How important is that physical space in terms of encouraging students to come and hopefully coming back to get the help they need?
It's huge. We know, actually, I mean, it's one of the recommended practices for the Association of Recovery in Higher Education that you have that dedicated space. That space creates community. Again, we had meetings in different buildings all over campus that had to change rooms every semester. There was no chance for people who maybe went to one meeting once a week and went to another meeting to interact. So we had a lot of people who, yeah, maybe they knew people who were going to the same meetings, but there was no way for the community as a whole to coalesce to really realize exactly how not alone they were. Having this one dedicated space lets students know on campus that they're valued. It lets them know that, you know, gives them that opportunity to gather together, to create that community. That's been really cool to watch that over the course of the semester, there's always students in there. There's always a couple of students, you know, somewhere between 3 and 6 that make that their hangout space, make that their daily study space, make that the space that they interact in and that's theirs.
We are talking to Lily Ettinger, Senior Coordinator for Recovery Services at Baylor. And, you know, I feel like this is an issue that kind of hides in plain sight a little bit on a college campus, kind of like hunger on a college campus. Well, addiction certainly does. So let's talk about what that looks like here at Baylor. And I know the Association of Recovery in Higher Ed, which you've referenced, which Baylor's a part, has said that 21% of 18 to 20-year-olds meet criteria for substance use disorder. So we've got the numbers here, but take us inside that a little bit. What are some of those criteria, and what does that look like for a student here at Baylor University trying to achieve his or her academic goals while also struggling with something personal like that?
Yeah, so the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual is DSM-5 is the new diagnostic manual we have, and it's updated the way that we categorize alcohol and substance use disorders to best reflect what we know from best research. So substance use disorder is categorized into mild, moderate, or severe categories based on the number of criteria met. So 2 or 3 for mild, 4 or 5 for moderate, 6 or 7 for that severe level. And briefly, there's kind of 11 criteria that we look at, and those include hazardous use, tolerance changes, social interpersonal problems related to use, neglecting major roles in their life to use, using for longer or larger amounts than they've planned, repeated attempts to quit or to control their use, spending a lot of time using, giving up other activities to use, physical and psychological problems related to use, craving, and withdrawal. So those are those 11 symptoms. And in Baylor students, it often looks like that rapid tolerance buildup, especially among those who are newly exposed. We're talking from a month of starting it to daily use, neglecting major roles and activities. I mean, not going to class, not studying, missing major assignments. These are things that we see a fair amount. And changes in friends group, increases in isolation, and that craving and withdrawal piece for as well. So those are big things we see with our students.
So when you look at that, not to make a trivial comparison, but we have all seen those quizzes where you take in, say, if you'd have 1, 2, or 3 of these factors, you might, you know, cell phone addiction or something like that. So it's kind of a similar thing that you all look at when you work with students. When they come here to Baylor, do you find I'm guessing you kind of run the gamut a little bit of students who are maybe already dealing with substance use disorder when they come here, maybe students that the pressures of college or opportunities in college help lead to that.
Yeah. So there's the Association of Recovery Schools. There is a network of recovery high schools around the country and a number of students who about half of our students already are in recovery by the time they get to college. And then the other half either happens very quickly as they get to college or they've left college and come back or they've just transferred to Baylor, having left a negative environment or having left treatment and coming back to college.
What services do you offer at the Beecham Addiction Recovery Center?
So we were originally designed, and most college recovery programs were originally designed as non-clinical programs for students during and after the time that they're receiving clinical services. So part of that full community system of care model, we provide recovery coaching, connection to those clinical places when students walk in and present with active addiction. We provide for a variety of different recovery meetings, including like 12-step meetings, religious meetings. We have a grit group that we do with the counseling center. We offer prayer groups multiple times a week and with the Office of Spiritual Life. We do a yoga meditative group every week as well. We try to provide a ton of sober social events, and having that dedicated space for that is so important, as well as a lot of educational events.
How important is that community piece? It seems like when you look at what you offer and the way you serve students, that word community comes up a lot.
Yeah, knowing that you're not alone and knowing that you have other people who won't judge you for what you've been through, but can often share their own lived experience as a form to help others. That's a huge piece. Seeing other people in that same space. A lot of young students, a lot of young people say, oh, that's not, you know, it's not a problem. It's a party. And we can dismiss younger people, younger adults particularly, and the real problems that they're having. So knowing that they're not alone, being able to experience life with other people who are attempting to do the same things they are, who understand the difficulty of recovery, can help.
This is Baylor Connections on 103.3 KWBU-FM. We are visiting today with Lily Ettinger, Senior Coordinator for Recovery Services at Baylor, working with students in the recently opened Beecham Addiction Recovery Center, which we also call BARC here at Baylor University. And what are some factors that you see that, you know, when a young person either comes to college with an addiction or develops one in college, what are some of the big factors you see, and maybe especially maybe here at Baylor University, just to kind of personalize it a bit?
Yeah, so we have, if you have high stress and easy availability of use, we know that those things can tend to, for people who are already in addiction, that's a big thing. A big thing that a lot of people don't think about, particularly for alcohol and substance use, is the genetic component. This is one of the reasons that we really consider, you know, addiction as a disease is, you know, 60% of someone's risk to alcoholism is genetic. Two people could drink the exact same amount, and one will experience those changes that lead to addiction, and one won't. And it doesn't have anything to do with their own personal patterns. We do know that eating disorders are heavily correlated with alcohol and substance use disorders, previous histories of anxiety or depression. Those are some things that we look at as well.
You know, I think, you know, a college environment when there's, you know, pressure to get grades, and we certainly know students' time, there's a lot of demands on students' time, whether it's with a fraternity or sorority, student organizations, an outside job. How do you work with students? I mean, is that a big part of what you look at with them? You look at their patterns? Do you look at the individual struggles they face that can help maybe lead to some of those pressures to use?
We do. We also look a lot at what their ambitions are. A big thing in recovery is that, you know, recovery has to come first. If recovery isn't something that people are really putting as a priority, then everything else is going to continually fall apart. But we love to look at and use some of those things, some of those pressures, particularly that ambition that students have can be such an asset for their recovery because they want to stay in school. They want to achieve their dreams. Using someone's dreams is a method of, you know, helping them get out of wherever they are, helping them continue on the path of recovery is something that we definitely look at and consider.
You know, one of the great things about being here on a college campus like Baylor and then in broader Central Texas is there are a lot of great resources. Earlier you mentioned Spiritual Life. We have the Baylor Counseling Center here on campus. There's numerous great medical facilities and treatment options in Central Texas. What's that look like? What's that partnership look like between the BARC and then between the broader community and a lot of the resources here at Baylor?
We are part of the McLennan County Recovery Oriented System of Care, the ROSC. Jamie Schmidt with the Heart of Texas MHMR is a rock star over there. I think McLennan County ROSC is one of the best in the country. It's something that we're really lucky to be able to have here, but that organizes people who are working with housing, employment, judicial involvement, probation, and that community care, treatment, advocacy, faith-based work. Like, all of those different areas are noticed and part of our ROSC. And so we work with them. We work with Voice and VASA to do that drug take back event, the Baylor Police. We work really closely with the counseling center and making sure that our students are in the right counseling group, that they're getting seen at the counseling center, that things are being communicated. So we have a lot of great partnerships with those particular, but also with like the Baylor community at large.
You know, when you think of a lot of the resources Baylor had in place and you think about how quickly the Beecham Addiction Recovery Center came together, maybe part of that reason is because there were already a lot of opportunities for you to plug in and I guess really sort of complement what they were already doing with that bigger focus on addiction. We are visiting with Lily Ettinger, Senior Coordinator for Recovery Services at Baylor University. I want to talk to you now. You've talked about stigmas that students face, about talking about substance use disorder, talking about the pressures they face. Tell me a little bit about the stigmas that students face and why it's obviously important to get past that, but why is it so important?
Yeah, I was actually talking about this to a friend at Prosper Waco yesterday because they have the OK to Say campaign. Stigma for mental health and for addiction is unfortunately huge. And a lot of times we don't do a great job at knowing how to talk about it. It is scary to talk about. A number of times when I ask students, like, hey, do you have a family history of addiction? They honestly don't know. Conversations at home, we know, like conversations with parents before students get to college about that family member that they maybe have never met and why they haven't met them. Conversations about things that, you know, parents might have struggled with before their kids were born. Being able to be honest, recovery is not a negative identity. We often talk about people in addiction and we use words like addict, and we try very hard at the BARC to use that person first language that we know is so important, because a recovery identity is not stigmatized. But addiction can be very stigmatized, and it can be very hard for somebody, particularly on a campus at Baylor, where we do celebrate somewhat of this culture of sameness, this culture of, you know, following these rules and being, you know, we are a conservative campus. It's a great thing in a lot of ways, but it can create problems, some shame, disbelief, and some God trauma, people saying negative things about how God feels about somebody because of their addiction.
Well, you know, obviously, you look at the faith aspect. Obviously, faith when facing something like this is a very, very positive thing. But in terms of Christian communities, sometimes are there sometimes some things a student might have to overcome, either maybe feeling like friends and family might be ashamed of them because of their, you know, because of the background they grew up in. Do you see a lot of that?
We do, more than I expected. So I actually have my master's degree. I'm a graduate of Truett Seminary, and I was really excited to be able to work at Baylor in this field, particularly because the faith involvement in recovery is so important. It's a huge part of a lot of people in the 12 steps. It's definitely a huge part of Celebrate Recovery, a number of different other like faith-based models for recovery that we support and we support our students using. But a lot of them have a lot of, we call, you know, God-based trauma. Students who were told, well, if you really prayed, then you'd be okay. And I am all for prayer as a spiritual discipline, as a spiritual tool. It is really important, but it isn't the treatment for an addiction. And there's nothing wrong with a person for when prayer doesn't work. For those who have prayed and been, you know, relieved of their obsession and their addiction, like, that's great. And I am thankful for that. And I can't think of anybody who wouldn't be thankful for that. But there's often more needed. And that's not a sign that there's something wrong with the faith of the person who's struggling.
Comprehensive treatment could be an answer to those
yes.
prayers that maybe family members are praying. If someone's listening and maybe they feel like they know someone who might be dealing with this, well, what are some tips you might have for them, whether it's a family member or a family friend even? What might you tell them to do?
There are a ton of resources. If somebody is struggling with a family member, there are a number of groups that are designed particularly for family members. We have, you know, Al-Anon, Nar-Anon, like these different groups that are specifically designed for friends and family. There are a number of church groups that are designed, you know, for the parents of those who are struggling. But to seek out resources, SAMHSA.gov has a treatment finder. In Waco, there's like the Synacor Foundation. If you're worried about sending your kid to college, collegiaterecovery.org is the website for the National Association of Christian Recovery. And there's also the National Association for Christian Recovery, which is NACR.org. All of these have great resources for anybody looking to understand and learn more.
We are visiting with Lily Ettinger, Senior Coordinator for Recovery Services at Baylor University. And let's look at it from the other side of the coin now here a little bit. You know, talk about students receiving these resources, but what do students battling substance use disorder bring to campus? Because obviously we're talking about them right now a lot in terms of what they're facing, but there's many, many other sides to them, obviously. What do you see are some of the value they bring to the Baylor family?
So I think that students who are in recovery, once they're, you know, more in that stable place, I think they harness like the secret superpower. Students in recovery bring a ton of assets to campus. My students who, you know, they're more than 6 months sober, they do not no-show to any event they have with me. They show up to the meetings they say they're going to. They show up to their classes. They manage their stress. They're the, you know, 10% of students who are actually getting all 8 hours of sleep each night. They're taking care of their nutrition. They're working out. These are students who we know national data shows that they're more likely to stay in school. They have higher GPAs than average, and they're more likely to graduate. Those are things like, I wish every student lived like a student who is more than 6 months in recovery.
Why is that?
They know that, you know, part of recovery is part of living a balanced life. You have to take care of your own health. As younger adults, it's really easy to say, I can pull this all-nighter and I'll be okay. A student in recovery knows that that's not something that's going to be okay, that it puts them at more risk, that it threatens their health in a way that might be more quickly apparent than a student who says, I have this wiggle room of being young and resilient.
What would you say as we kind of wind down here on Baylor Connections today? You know, again, you look at the Beecham Addiction Recovery Center and how quickly it's come together. What are ways you're looking to grow here in the future? I mean, are you thinking that far ahead right now?
Yeah. So we wrote out a 3-year plan of what we expected. We've already hit the numbers for those 3 years in a number of our different areas. So that's been both exciting and somewhat scary to think I had 3 years before I thought I'd be at this point, and I already have this many students at this place. And so at least I have a plan for another semester. We hope to be able to provide some on-campus sober living that is recovery-oriented, like a number of other campuses. We hope to be able to include and provide more training, some classes that are very specifically oriented towards students in recovery, peer leader classes, and also certification for their peer recovery support specialists. So being able to continually provide that education and training for our students to become leaders in the recovery movement as they graduate and as they move forward in life.
Well, we'll look forward to watching that growth here in the weeks and months ahead, and maybe talk to you again a little bit later on down the line as the services continue to grow. And as we close here, I want to ask again, if maybe a student's listening who is interested in the Beecham Addiction Recovery Center and its services, or someone listening again who might want to plug into some resources in the community or on campus, where should they go again, or how can they get a hold of you?
So if you're a student, my office is in Teal and in East Village, 20 steps from the front door of East Village Dining. Feel free to walk on in. We also have student workers who are there during all those business hours, so 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., probably a little later too, to be honest. We'll be available. They can email me. They can find my email address on the Baylor Wellness website. They can also call me. My number is on that Baylor Wellness website as well. And for people in the community, there are, again, a ton of great resources. We have the Synacor Foundation here. We have Prosper Waco that has a list of all the different treatment providers. Yeah.
Well, good stuff. Well, Lily, I know this, like I said earlier, this is an area that maybe isn't as well known. So I appreciate you coming in today and shedding a little light on it and all the hard work you're doing for Baylor students.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Lily Ettinger, Senior Coordinator for Recovery Services here at Baylor University. Appreciate you joining us today. This has been Baylor Connections on 103.3 KWBU-FM. If you'd like to go back and hear this program, you can go online to baylor.edu/connections. I am Derek Smith. I want to thank Brody Bashaw, Station Manager at KWBU, and Cassie Bowers and Lori Fogelman from Baylor Marketing and Communications for their assistance as well. We hope you'll join us each week, Friday mornings at 11 a.m. and again online, baylor.edu/connections. This is Baylor Connections on KWBU-FM, Waco.